Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally, TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GuerrillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's alternative media. My very special guest joining us live from the fabulous fluoride capital in New Zealand, it's Aucklander, Catherine Smith from Uncensored Magazine. Catherine, welcome.
Oh, g'day, Vinnie. How are you?
I'm actually feeling really, really fantastic. I can't believe I'd be feeling this good.
Oh, excellent. Well, you don't drink the fluoride, do you?
Yeah. But now that you're here, let's get into it. I'd love it if you could just explain a little bit about yourself for the listeners, just a little bit about who you are and your general works and whatnot. Fire away.
Okay. Well, let's see. I'm almost 40. I'm married, and I've been involved in journalism and activism on various issues last sort of 15, 20 years. For the last 5 years, I've been the assistant editor for Uncensored magazine, and I'm now one of the editors for the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine.
Now, has there ever been a Journal of Natural Medicine before in New Zealand?
There used to be a magazine called Healthy Options, but the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine is a bit different from Healthy Options. It's more serious, basically. And unfortunately, Healthy Options did have some good writers, but it's no longer in publication, which is one of the reasons why we started the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine. Because this simply was no longer a magazine, New Zealand-produced magazine, for people who are serious about health issues.
Is that a commonplace thing in every country, or is that just specific to New Zealand?
What, having a magazine on natural health issues?
Or rather having a lack of one?
The USA has got... I've just forgotten. I think it's called Alternative Medicine. That's a very good publication. There's a natural health magazine in Australia. The name I've forgotten. I'm not sure about hard copy publications in other English-speaking countries, tell you the truth. I mean, in the UK's got What Doctors Don't Tell You, which is very good, but that's an internet-based publication. I mean, but, you know... Here we are, we're in New Zealand, we've produced the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine. People want to check out the website, it's www.naturalmedicine.net.nz. And, you know, we're going for something that has a good balance of enough science to satisfy people who like science, but is also readable for people who haven't got a particularly technical background, and is also political. Because, unfortunately, health gets political regardless of whether you'd like it to or not. I mean, the situation in New Zealand, as people are aware if they live in New Zealand, is that we have a public health system which is funded through tax contributions.
This is the thing. How exactly does politics get intermingled with the medical industry? In my opinion, it's because the medical industry and rather medical companies, pharmaceutical companies, for example, are so wealthy and have so many lobbyists that they actively recruit and pay off the political realm to push their issues and defend them if necessary.
Well, I don't know of any solid evidence that suggests that, you know, New Zealand politicians are in the play of the drug companies. I mean, if there were solid evidence that were easily accessible, it would probably be a bit easier to get some positive change than it is. In terms of medical politics, we're really talking about a problem that arose in the early years of the 20th century, particularly in the 30s. Well, I'm actually getting ahead of myself. There was a Flexner report. A guy called Flexner was told to go around the various medical schools in the United States and assess them all. The reason being not because they're necessarily doing a bad job, but because there were what the medical profession thought were too many doctors, and of course too many doctors drives down prices, doesn't it? So their solution to this problem, quote unquote, was to get Mr. Flexner to go around and rate some medical schools as fantastic and some as deserving of closure. The ones that stayed in business, the general medical colleges, were barred from offering courses in naturopathy or homeopathy or any of the sort of various eclectic natural therapies-based treatments that were involved around that time.
What justification did they give for barring naturopathy and all that?
It was just deemed unscientific. I mean, essentially, you have a
What scientific empirical evidence said to them that it was unscientific?
Well, I don't think there was any evidence that it was actually unscientific.
Oh, hold on.
You had essentially a drug company mandate to. We had the beginnings of a drug industry where they were taking, you know, compounds that have been previously found in nature, like the salicylates found in aspirin, and isolating them and synthesizing and producing patent medicines out of those compounds, and getting exclusive patents on those compounds, and they wanted to protect this new sort of drug-based paradigm from undue competition. And the result was that medical schools ended up being like the way that most medical schools are today, where regardless of where you are in the world, if you graduate with as a medical doctor, you tend to know virtually nothing about nutrition, a lot about pathology, which is useful, good amounts of information on differential diagnosis, very useful, but you haven't got a clue, really, how to treat disease other than with drugs or surgery or, you know, radiation if you specialise in that area, and you've got virtually no clue about how to keep people healthy and or curing them, because drugs in many cases, unless you're actually talking about, you know, an acute infection which requires antibiotics, drugs don't normally cure people, they normally manage their diseases. So you have that sort of
very similar job to a politician. The job is not to fix a problem, it's to either create another one so that they can pretend to fix it whilst they're just creating another one. So they essentially create more work for themselves, whereas if they were to solve problems or cure conditions, they'd put themselves out of business.
Well, yes, that's entirely true, and unfortunately, you know, the one sort of facet of you know, general allopathic, you know, conventional medicine, which is so-called preventative, is vaccination. And what that's done is created a huge population of people with serious chronic medical problems that many of them will have for the rest of their life. And so, I mean, that's a wonderful example of how you can, a medical intervention such as vaccination can create a demand for medical services for the rest of the patient's lifetime. Never mind the fact that people can grow up perfectly healthy without being vaccinated at all. You know, there's, you can't have that if you want to.
If you want to develop
a disease care industry, you need your population to be as sick as possible.
Well, what evidence do you have that people grow up and don't need vaccinations at all?
Well, in New Zealand, there's about 60,000 babies born a year. And there's a sort of a staunch 5% of parents. It's not very many, but if you think about it, that's 3,000 babies born a year who never get vaccinated against anything. And this has been going on for decades. And if these babies were growing up to, get tetanus in any sort of significant number, or measles or whooping cough, and suffer any sort of serious complications other than the normal sort of course of the infection, it would be all over the media. It's not, simply because these children just grow up and they often have, you know, the sort of common childhood infections like measles, like whooping cough, like chicken pox, like mumps and rubella, get over them with no problem and grow up to be, you know, healthy, intelligent adults who haven't had their brains compromised by being injected with, you know, vaccines containing either mercury-based preservatives which have been added to the vaccine, or only yesterday I was reading about how the so-called mercury-free vaccines are not actually mercury-free, because even though most pediatric vaccines used in New Zealand no longer have this mercury-based preservative called thimerosal added to them after as a preservative, there's still thimerosal used during the manufacture of the vaccine, and the filtration process before it's bottled up into its little ampule doesn't actually remove all of it. The mercury level is a lot lower than it used to be, but it still is present to a degree. And I've been reading a very interesting book, which I'd highly recommend to all your readers. It is called Vaccine Epidemic. It's got its own website. I think it's www.vaccineepidemic.com. That's where I found out this piece of information. And Vaccine Epidemic has got contributors from lawyers and doctors, military personnel who've testified about the effects of the compulsory vaccines and the experiments on military personnel in their states, which have caused huge numbers of people to become very seriously ill and disabled. So it's a very interesting book because it puts the whole vaccination debate, if you like, into the context of health and human rights. And, you know, I'm a trained herbalist, and, you know, if you're in any sort of healthcare practice, your first obligation should be the welfare of that particular patient. But unfortunately, mass vaccination programs and government mandates to get certain vaccines as a requirement for school entry, such as is happening in the States, or, you know, even university entry, college entry, or as part of your job if you're a military person or whatever. Once you get sort of a government telling doctors that they have to vaccinate people as, you know, and set targets, you know, for herd immunity, you're not actually practicing medicine in the best interest of the patient anymore. You're actually being a functionary of the government. And, you know, you might say to yourself, well, you know, that's all very well, you know. What harm is that if vaccines do more good than harm, at least for, you know, most people? The problem is that there's ample evidence that vaccines overall do more harm than good, and I'll give you some examples in a moment. But moreover, even if they didn't, the moment you as a health practitioner decide that you'll put a government mandate ahead of the interest of your individual patient, you're not actually practicing medicine in the interest of best interest of your patient. You're actually being a functionary of the state, and you're following orders. And we all remember how, you know, various people involved in all sorts of atrocities in the Second World War in terms of medical experimentation on prisoners in places like Dachau and stuff under the Nazi administration said, oh, well, I was only following orders. And even before, you know, the Holocaust got going in Germany and people were targeted for their, their religious belief. Well, I mean, of course, you know, Nazis considered Jewish people to be a separate ethnicity, but, you know, that's another story altogether. There was mass killings of people who were disabled and people who were chronically ill by doctors who allowed themselves to become functionaries of the state, and the state had decreed that people who were disabled or had some sort of illness from which it was deemed that they wouldn't recover or were unlikely to recover were too much of a burden to the state to live. The expression translated as unworthy life. And so, you know, we're on a very slippery slope here, so it's very good. You know, there is a resistance movement, and anybody who's concerned about either, you know, vaccination safety and wants to know about the risks and benefits of vaccines and also the sort of medico-legal and ethical implications of mass vaccination campaigns should definitely get a copy of Vaccine Epidemic and read it. And join the Centre for Personal Rights, too, in the USA, if you're a United States citizen, that's there to protect you from incursions on your personal liberty and
They seem to be happening more and more lately. My very special guest is Catherine Smith from uncensored.co.nz, the author of the Cancer Prevention Handbook, and we'll be right back after this very short break.
Well, there's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on?
Look at me, driving and I won't stop. And it feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure. My cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations and let them all die in exasperation. Have them all healed from the lacerations. Have them all killed by assassination. I can make anybody go to prison just because I don't like them. And I can do anything with no permission. I have it all under my command because I can guide a missile by satellite. By satellite. By satellite. And I can hit a target through a telescope.
Welcome back. I said welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about looking on the lighter side of genocide. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio Broadcasting, also on Affinity FM in Invercargill 87.7. Now, my very special guest, Catherine Smith, is still on the line with us, and she's extremely busy. And I'm extremely appreciative to have some of her time because...
Yeah, I'm sorry, I can't spend more time with you, Vinny. I'd do the whole 2 hours if I could.
But, yeah.
The government
keeps
making more and more work for me.
As I understand it, Kath, there's some very, very deep Shiite Muslim going down in New Zealand that's got you all up in a huff, and I'm very curious to know what it is.
Well, about a year ago in New Zealand, the Health Select Committee held what they call an inquiry into how to increase vaccination completion rates. Of course, they don't call it vaccination. They call it immunization because they want people to believe that unless you've had, you know, a succession of needles getting stuck into your arm or your leg, if you're a wee baby, you don't have an immune system. But I refuse to use that I word. I like to use the word vaccination because it comes from vacca. And... reminds us that vaccination is really treating everybody as if we're a bunch of cows, back like the way that Jenna used to take cowpox and experiment on people by injecting it into them. Actually, vaca means cow in Spanish, and it's derived from the Latin. But, yes.
So we're like in some fashion... Literally the cattle here being experimented.
We are literally the cattle, that's right. And they talk about herd immunity, and they've got a bee in the bonnet, has various people in the medical profession. They're saying, on the one hand, that if you get vaccinated against something, you should be protected against it. On the other hand, individual protection isn't good enough. You've got to vaccinate like 95% of the population to get what's called herd immunity. Moo! Right? And... The theory being that if everybody's vaccinated, or almost everybody, there'll be nobody who's vulnerable to the disease to spread it, so the disease will die out. Now, it sounds all good in practice, but of course, in theory, but in practice you get things like schools where like 98.9% of the children have been vaccinated, and they've got all the medical records to prove it up the wazoo, and they still get epidemics of stuff like measles. And I remember reading one paper about this a few years ago, and the writer contributed rather sadly that with high vaccination rates, all that seems to happen is that measles becomes a disease of vaccinated persons. That's the quote.
In practice, vaccines do the direct opposite of what this stated purpose is, right?
Well,
which means that the only way you can actually have something implemented in society like that is if it's covered up with enormous amounts of lies.
Well, that's right. Herd immunity, as far as I can see, is basically a big lie. And, I mean, I've got to say that from a personal liberty perspective, even if herd immunity were not, at the very least, you know, incredibly scientifically debatable. The idea for an individual to get themselves vaccinated or to get their child vaccinated, it should be that individual's decision. If that individual thinks that the benefits of the vaccine outweigh the risks and they want to get vaccinated, well, you know, They've got that right to do that, and if it's their child, they've got that right to do that. You just have to, like, hope that their child isn't going to be, or them, isn't going to be one of the people who get a terrible adverse reaction from the vaccine.
They're practically going to a doctor who spent years and years in medical school to roll the dice, to play Russian roulette, except instead of a bullet, it's a jab.
That's right, because there's, you know, there's variation between vaccine lots, and unfortunately, there's been a very bad history on the part of regulatory authorities in New Zealand as well as the USA. When they do manage to identify vaccine lots that are particularly hazardous, you'd think they'd recall them, but they don't in a lot of cases. They just let those particularly toxic and dangerous lots of vaccines keep on being injected into people and, you know, come what may, you know, whether that's that somebody's child gets autism or, you know, cerebral palsy as a result of having, you know, seizures because and being oxygen deprived as a result and being disabled for the rest of their lives. Vaccine manufacturers don't care. You know, they've made their buck. And in the States, you've got the National Vaccine, I think it's Compensation Act. And what that did in 1982 was remove liability from the vaccine companies for adverse reactions and plonk it squarely onto the taxpayer. Now, the idea was that if people got certain adverse reactions from different vaccines, they should automatically get compensation. There was a list of compensatable diseases. For the MMR, for example, if you've got arthritis following the vaccine, which is much more common if you have the vaccine after puberty, and they don't tell women that, you know, they just say, oh, your rubella vaccine, your rubella antibody level is low, you better have an MMR and get your rubella antibodies up if you're planning to have children in the next few years. And, you know, bang, you know, that could be the end of, you know, somebody's life, really, if they...
The human body is basically a very, very fragile balancing tool, and any amount of the right or wrong chemical at any point, like a vaccination, any one by itself could trigger something very, very bad from, you know, be the final straw on the camel's back, as it were.
Yeah, that's right. And the trouble about these things is reactions can be very unpredictable. Of course, there's two reasons for that. Like we discussed before, the fact that, you know, some lots of vaccine are much worse than others. But the other thing is there's all sorts of genetic differences between people. There's differences in people's nutritional status. There's like a whole raft of things that mean that some people can tolerate vaccines without any particularly bad side effects, and other people can end up dead or crippled for life from them.
So you just don't know what's going to happen.
No, you're listening
to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Catherine Smith, live from New Zealand, from the fabulous fluoridated capital of Auckland. And we'll be back after the break, after these very short messages from our wee sponsors, eh? See you soon. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Broadcasting live from New Zealand. Interestingly, live from the future. My very special guest is Catherine Smith from uncensored.co.nz, New Zealand's premier magazine, and also the editor or co-editor of the New Zealand Natural Health Journal, I believe of what it's called.
It's the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine.
There we go. That sounds much better than what I said.
Yep. Now, the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine, www.naturalmedicine.net.nz. That's right. That's a good-sounding title, isn't it? I mean, you can just call it Natural Medicine for short, but the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine does sound nice and authoritative.
It sounds generic and Ivy League-ish.
Okay. Well, that's not such a bad thing either, because, you know, even if the Ivy League doesn't necessarily deserve the reputation it's got, it's still got a good reputation.
Is the Natural Medicine Journal delivered with the same kind of pompous romp?
No, it's not. It's readable.
How unfortunate. Well, this is the thing. What I've found very interesting about these major publications that are supported by organizations that have copious quantities of bucks and all the brightest minds that the world can do, that people who have absolutely no money but a good mind can make a better publication at home on a computer now.
Well, that is true. I mean, the quality of a publication depends on the ideas and the care that have gone into it, and it is fantastic the way that sort of desktop publishing does allow people who have got, as you say, a good mind, and of course you need some determination, some time available to do the work, you can go off and produce something that's going to help people, which is the whole idea behind the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine.
Well, it's the whole idea behind New Zealand patriotism in general, you know. We do want to save our country from the New World Order here, and the New World Order has many faces.
Well, that's right, and one of those many faces is, of course, what we were discussing before about how there is the agenda to get everybody vaccinated is not just limited to the United States, where there have been, you know, various vaccines that have been mandated for school entry for years. The Health Select Committee is held this inquiry on how to increase vaccination rates. Rejected all the information that various people like me and my husband and Hilary Butler, who's extremely knowledgeable of vaccines, she's written two books about them, and various other people like Sue Claridge from the Immunisation Awareness Society here. She's got a Masters of Science, produced a fantastic report that showed how the mortality from infectious diseases declined massively before mass vaccination was introduced. All that information was resoundingly ignored in favour of adopting a new coercive policy to try and force parents either to decide to have no vaccinations, which will be unacceptable to a lot of parents because they believe that at least some vaccines are useful, or the other side of the equation is if parents do want to vaccinate under these new recommendations, if they're instituted, they'll have to have all the vaccines for their child, regardless of whether their child gets sick partway through the course and they don't want to complete it, regardless of whether they are a Christian or a Buddhist or a Muslim, for that matter, or anyone else who has a problem with tissue from aborted fetuses being used in the manufacture of vaccines, like the MMR vaccine that's used to culture the rubella viruses in that vaccine, and the brand in the New Zealand market. It's not a good look. There's a new website that's been set up for this issue specifically so that people can resist this agenda. It's called www.noforcedvaccines.org. That's www.noforcedvaccines.org.
And we'll be right back at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Join us in the chat room there. The phone lines are now open. 402-237-2525 is the number to call in. My very special guest is Catherine Smith, and we'll be right back after the short break. The facts we all get, but the system fails. We got to change the way we see the problem if we're gonna fix this place. My living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and go respect our right to live here on the land. It's Tino, I'm not Tina Tunnel. We don't own the banks. The parliament does so. So where do you ever stand? They pay in their bills off your back. With welcome back. Misleading our youth with welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. So kids act up and disturb our feeling as if the very whips of your masters are at your back in New Zealand and around the world. As inexorably, everybody's rights get legislated away and tyranny and the slow creep of a shadow government lurks into full view. My very special guest, Catherine Smith from uncensored.co.nz, joins us live now. In New Zealand, in recent history, we've had a few bills, Kath, that have been basically threatening all all civil liberties that I can think of, and there's probably a heck of a lot more that I'm just not aware of that have been probably schemed to have taken away right at this particular moment anyway. search and surveillance bill, for one. What is all this big raft of legislative change that the government's pushing through under urgency talking about? What's happening here?
Well, first of all, as far as I know, the search and surveillance bill isn't under urgency. Correct me if I'm wrong. Am I wrong? I hope I'm not wrong.
I don't know.
Right.
I hope I'm wrong.
Right. Okay. Well, the search and surveillance bill is definitely an incredibly bad bill for anybody who is at all interested in human rights and personal liberties, or, you know, fairness and justice, or any of those, sort of it's a fair go that sort of used to be the sort of the general sort of Kiwi way. Essentially, it sets up for the possibility of the government and any number of, there's a huge number of government agencies in New Zealand, including the Pork Board, which is interesting. I didn't know the Pork Board was a government agency. It's a pork marketing board. And it's probably not terribly happy with a lot of people, the Pork Marketing Board, actually, because there was a recent sort of expose within the last couple of years on New Zealand TV about how revolting the conditions are that they keep pregnant sows in, and you know, how sort of filthy and abominable and miserably these poor creatures live for a huge proportion of their lives. So, but anyway, this search and surveillance bill is going to give essentially police state powers to sort of the government and various sort of government agencies, including the Pork Board, and they'll be able to, if it gets passed, they'll be able to do things like pop in warrantless video surveillance into people's homes. You know, wonderful, potential there for any sort of perverts who may happen to be the police in the police force. Of course, most police are not perverts; they're very nice, but. You know, anybody who's lived in New Zealand has heard about, you know, various high-profile cases in which it's been very clear that, you know, there have been, historically at least, some incredibly perverted people in the police force. And any of those, you know, who've managed to escape undetected and thus far who will have an absolute field day if the search and surveillance bill gets passed, perving on people. And the other thing that's worrying about the search and surveillance bill is that they're having, can't quite remember the name of the order, but essentially they will be, the government will be able to force people to produce evidence that could be used against them in court. And people will apparently, if it gets passed, have the right to say, oh no, I don't want to produce such and such an evidentiary document. But they'll have to justify their reasons why to a judge, which, of course, well, it's a bit like, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't. Oh, well, no, sorry, I don't want to produce such and such a document because it might, you know, implicate me in such and such, you know, well, you know, right there, you know, anybody who's in a sort of position where they're charged with any sort of offence. And these days in New Zealand, you know, any sort of offence doesn't actually mean that you're a common criminal. It could potentially mean a lot of things that that people do as you know, part of their normal lives as being a citizen, such as being an activist.
Well, being criminalised is essentially the most important part of a citizen's life, as far as I'm concerned, because what the laws are just criminal.
Well, that's true. On the other hand, there's still a huge stigma attached to being criminalised. I mean, and people in general still have a fair amount of respect for the law. I mean, a lot of the law is, as you say, criminal. On the other hand, a lot of the law is sensible and just and, you know, reflects sort of, you know, Judeo sort of Christian heritage, you know, thou shalt not kill, etc.
Would that be like 50-50, you know, like 50% evil, 50% good that the courts do? Is it more like 80% bad?
I honestly have no idea.
Yeah, well, we don't really analyse these institutions in terms of, you know, a cost-benefit analysis, because I'm not sure if the cost is worth it.
Well, yes, you're right. On the other hand, if you've... I read a book, and I can't remember who wrote it, or what it was called, which, of course, is not terribly helpful to your listeners, but it was written by a veteran Polish journalist about his experiences covering various events in Africa over the span of three decades. And some of the stories make, you know, simply horrendous reading because, you know, as we all know, you know, Africa, was subject to colonization, and then the colonists left, and there were these various, you know, disparate tribes who had a sort of a history of, well, let's say, not getting along well, to put it mildly, who were lumped into a single, national entity where... where it didn't work as a functional country, where the only where people rose to the top through through sort of cronyism and brute force and repressed the people in their country, and we ended up with situations of civil wars, which we can't necessarily blame the indigenous populations, even if they did have a history of, into sort of tribal conflict for all these wars either, of course. If you look at a map of Africa, the worst wars actually coincide in the most resource-rich areas. There's definitely been an international sort of big business agenda to depopulate those areas of Africa where they have got the best mineral resources by, you know, financing various militia and what have you. So that the local population who were just living on the land, peaceably on the whole as they had for thousands of years, are forced to flee from these absolutely bloody guerrilla conflicts where anarchy completely reigned. So I can't pass a question about whether or not we actually need laws. I think we do, because if you read any of these stories of what happens in the country, in countries like these poor African states where law and order is completely broken down, it's not pretty reading. It's incredibly disturbing what happened to the ordinary citizens of those countries. Just awful.
And that seems to be, it's like really sad, Kath, because it seems to be happening everywhere. And I don't know. I mean, I'm young. I haven't gone through like a tyranny or a war before, and there haven't been. There's a lot less people alive today, both fortunately and unfortunately for some reasons, that have experienced war. And know just how frickin' stupid it is. And they're not really clicking on to the fact that we're already at war on our home soil. We're not being bombed or anything like that. But, hey, it's an inexorable conflict that is already inside your house right now.
Well, that's right. There's a war on for our minds. There's a war on against our health. I mean, that's one of the reasons why, if you live in Auckland, even if you don't drink the water like you and I, choose to... avoid drinking it by, buying expensive, it is relatively expensive, even if it's, a good price for spring water. It's fluoride-free. You can absorb the rubbish through your skin every time you shower. Of course, it's not possible not to shower. and you also see it in the way that people are denied, access to various traditional medicines, such as cannabis indica. And there's some very interesting stuff on the net now about how people have used oil, as in the essential oil made from the buds. I'm pretty sure, when I say cannabis indica, it might be sativa. You need to go and, if anybody's interested in this subject, they'll need to go and see a documentary on YouTube called Run from the Cure. I think, Rick, is it Simpson?
Yeah, Rick Simpson. I've had him on the show.
You've
and
had him on your
oh
show,
my goodness.
You? That's right. And it's essential oil made from the buds of one of the cannabis species. One of them is better. He said the one that's more sedating is better because people with cancer need to rest and sleep. And he was getting cures in cancers that are normally terminal, such as lung cancer, just by using a tiny bit of this essential oil extracted through a solvent extraction process from the cannabis species buds, and which was given to the person and to absorb and just painted on the inside of the... of the oral mucosa, inside of the mouth, which absorbs through those mucous membranes there. There's people dying of cancer all the time, and that's part of the war on humanity. I mean, cannabis is just one example of something that has the potential to save a lot of people's lives that people are denied. going back to the politics of medicine, if with our publicly funded health system here, if you get cancer, you can normally get free surgery and free radiation therapy, and a lot of the drugs used in standard cancer chemotherapy, not the really new expensive ones, but the old clunkers, the old nasty cytotoxic ones, that, you know, work for very few sort of cancers and make people's lives miserable for many of the common ones with no good effect for most people. But they're all free, as opposed to if you wanted to try something quote-unquote alternative, regardless of whether it has got some evidence behind it, regardless of whether it's an alternative pharmaceutical drug, regardless of whether it's something like the Gerson therapy, and Dr. Max Gerson in the 1940s published a cancer therapy, the results of 50 cases in which he documented cures of the huge variety of different cancers as nutritional-based treatment. If you want any of those alternatives, you have to pay for them for your own pocket. And that's going back to the Flexner report we were talking about from the beginning of the 20th century, where they decided that, A, there were too many doctors, therefore, you know, medicine was, they weren't getting the sort of the reimbursements from their patients that they might, you know, otherwise get if there's a scarcity of healthcare personnel. And B, this determination to see that people get the type of treatment that makes the most profit for the pharmaceutical industry. So that's going on in New Zealand, and it's contributing to unnecessary deaths all the time. Yes, it's a quiet war, and I mean, much as I strive to it's a very sort of little guerrilla front, such as helping out with this campaign against coerced vaccination, and just going back to the No Forced Vaccines issue, www.noforcedvaccines.org. If you are in New Zealand, please check out the site, because essentially what the Select Committee is proposing is tying in enrollment at school and early childhood centres to a child's vaccination status. If you're a parent who's decided not to vaccinate at all, you'll probably be able to get your child to enrol. If you're a parent and you've had your child vaccinated with every single jab that's recommended, yes, you'll be okay. On the other hand, if you're a parent and you decided you didn't want the MMR vaccine because you're concerned about autism or for any other reason, or you've stopped vaccinating because your child has become ill after the shots, you've decided, enough is enough, they're obviously doing more harm than good in your child's case, you might be stuck with your child not being able to enroll in an early childhood centre or school if they get this recommendation through. And they're also talking about linking the current 20 hours free early childhood education funding that every child in New Zealand is currently entitled to children's vaccination status. So if the child's had all the vaccines, they'll probably keep the funding. If they've had none, they'll probably keep the funding. But, if you're in the middle and your child has started the vaccination program and hasn't completed, it looks like you could be out of luck, and that could be your 20 hours free ECE cutoff, in which case you'd be paying the full cost of your child's early childhood centre or daycare attendance, which is obviously going to be huge for many families.
And that's going to force. That might even prompt some families to in fact stop working because they can't afford the childcare anyway.
Absolutely.
And just be working to pay the childcare when they may as well just stay home.
Well, that's right. And
so there's a knock-on effect of unemployment over there, and I think that basically we're heading towards a government-mandated, forced, and helped along and manufactured mega crisis, mega economic crisis, like the likes of which this country's never freaking seen.
That's right.
And goodness knows what type of legislation they're going to be able to justify within the entire society in crisis.
That's right, and they've already had criticisms over the legislation that's being rushed through over the Canterbury earthquake. As New Zealanders all know, but people around the world may not know or may have forgotten, there was a very large earthquake that devastated the city of Christchurch here, which is in the South Island of New Zealand. That earthquake was actually felt as far north as just 30 miles south of where we are here in Auckland. It was making the light bulbs swing, and there were like about 300 people killed outright. And there's like literally thousands upon thousands. I can't remember how many thousands, but it's 10,000 or 50,000 people at homes that are uninhabitable. It's a massive crisis down here. And the government's been able to rush through legislation without normal checks and balances, supposedly to redress this situation. And I haven't had time to read that to see whether there's anything that shouldn't be in there. who knows, there might have, you know, it's quite a common ploy in the States is to put stuff in under urgency and put some sort of unrelated rider in the legislation that's not related at all to the regular bill that's flicked in at the last minute. That might have been done with the Canterbury earthquake legislation, or it may not have. Let's hope the New Zealand politicians haven't caught on to that US trick. But just in terms of, like, you know, financial hardship, going back to www.noforcedvaccines.org, the other proposal the Select Committee has made is to consider linking quote-unquote existing parental benefits to the children's vaccination status. Now, I find that incredibly worrying because when we're talking about existing parental benefits, people in the States won't realise this, but, you know, of course, you know, wages have fallen in real terms for a long time in New Zealand, so that even families where both parents are working quite often rely on some sort of government top-up. There's a program called Family Support, which pulls up family income and keeps them off the poverty line. And if the government were to put family support payments, make them dependent on the kid having had all their vaccines or none, there could be a lot of people caught out and hurt. Or they might decide to get really fascist about it and simply deny it to people who don't vaccinate their children. You know, there's the devil is in the detail here. It's just a recommendation at this point to consider linking, you know, quote-unquote existing parental benefits to children's vaccination status, but it's a very, very worrying move. I mean, it might even mean the DPP or the unemployment benefit, and, of course, everybody in New Zealand knows that there's, like, probably... I can't remember how many, tens of thousands of people in the Canterbury area that's been affected by the Christchurch earthquake who would normally be at their jobs.
And it's basically...
Whose businesses and homes and places of employment have been destroyed. So they're just eking out a living at the moment in their ruined homes quite often.
Yeah, exactly. My very special guest has been Catherine Smith from uncensored.co.nz from the Journal of Natural Medicine here in New Zealand. And I'll be right back after the break to finish around the show. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to my very special guest, Catherine Smith from uncensored.co.nz, the godmother. Yes, well, you know, quite fantastic. We managed to swing you for another 15 minutes, and our fabulous board office is very, very nice.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, and when we're talking about government and legislation getting passed and all that kind of stuff, one thing that springs to mind is exactly how to resist it. And my answer is, in every way possible.
Well, that's right. And at noforcedvaccines.org, I've got a template letter that people can use to email the Prime Minister and the Minister of Health and the Associate Minister of Health. Their emails are on the website under the resources page, as well as that template letter.
Is this the Prime Minister John Key and Associate Prime Minister Peter Dunn?
No. I wasn't actually targeting the Associate Prime Minister.
The Associate Health Minister.
The Associate Health Minister is actually Tariana Turia.
Really?
Yep.
No interest. Oh, wait. Don't they have several Associate Ministers of Health or Assistant Ministers
maybe
of Health?
Maybe they do, to tell you the truth, but I got a letter from Tariana Turia as the Associate Minister of Health, so that's the person I put on the website. I mean,
well, what'd she say about it?
I haven't actually gotten a reply on the issue from her. I've asked people to, like, copy me the replies, but it normally takes ages to get any sort of reply out of anybody.
Maybe they have to call up their spin doctors and put together a very, very carefully placed three sentences before they tell you to F off.
Maybe they will. it would be good if people in New Zealand can email politicians of all parties. You can get, you know, their emails through the parliamentary website, or if they're a member of a major party, just, you know, click onto the Labour Party website or the National Party website, the Māori Party website, and just copy the letter, if assuming you agree with it, and go, you know, paste, flick, and just snow them.
Yeah. You'd be surprised how annoying it can be if you're a prime minister trying to get your job done when people are trying to mess you around and stop your evil agenda.
That's right.
And just remember, it's like the same principle as talk radio. For every one person that calls up talk radio and says something on air, there's probably about 1,000 people who wanted to say exactly the same thing but just didn't call in. It's the same thing with sending emails to your politicians as well. You become a representative for all of their voters that they look at, and they go,
That's right. Better not try this. It's very unpopular. And I think, you know, it's time very much for, like, a very public fight back to say that, you know, well, stuff off. And I don't really like using the F word. I don't know if you're even allowed to use it on the website. You know, how dare you, propose, stopping children from attending, their early childhood centre or enrolling at the school, because they haven't had all the vaccines that the Ministry of Health, says that they have, if their parents have just chosen to have vaccinated against tetanus. For example, they live on a farm and think that, that's a high risk of tetanus, which, people do here. They're allowed to make these sort of decisions, and parents should be allowed to make these sort of decisions. I mean, it's not the government who goes through the discomforts of pregnancy and, the potential risks of giving birth.
And yeah, exactly. They probably think tetanus is something that you get from playing too much tennis, my tetanus elbow is playing up today.
Yeah, that's quite good, tetanus elbow. Yeah, so
I'm going to elbow them in the face with a tetanus shot. There we go. I think it's like a fight back against government needs to be fun, because otherwise people don't want to get involved. Because let's face it, satire and taking the mickey out of these people is the one thing that aggravates them the most. And quite frankly, there's nobody that aggravates me more than the government being too serious. So here's the thing. Let's bring them down to size, because they're pathetic, useless, pathetic scumbags like the rest of us anyway. So why should we give them any credence, just because they're wearing they've gone in there?
Well, that's true on one respect. On the other hand, I don't personally think I'm a pathetic, useless scumbag. And there are some people who who want to do the right thing in the government, don't know how to do it. I honestly do think there are some
I'm just being too cynical, I guess. I agree. Yeah, there's good people in there, except they don't know what it is that they're doing.
Yeah, that's right. And you have people who I think have good intentions, like the Children's Commissioner, who contributed to the inquiry on increasing vaccination rates, who said that adults who work with children should be vaccinated as well. Again, presumably because the adults have to be vaccinated to protect the children. Now, if the children are getting vaccinated, why on earth would they need to vaccinate the adults? Surely the children would be protected. But, I mean, they've done an absolute marvellous job, the vaccination PR brigade. And,
who was the original
PR confusing
spin?
People, to think that, vaccinations protect you against disease, but B, because they don't, everybody has to get vaccinated so that nobody can spread the disease around. Now, come on, people, you can't have it both ways. Either the vaccines work and it's worth taking the risks of the vaccine and getting protection from the disease, or the vaccines don't work, in which case you might as well not do them. And in any case, there's no point in vaccinating 95% of the country with the vaccines that don't work, is it? Who's that going to protect? Well, it's going to protect the vaccine company's profits and nobody else, as far as I'm
concerned. Well, and incidentally, there's also, I hear, cancer viruses are now turning up in vaccines and have been there for quite some time.
Well,
and
yes, I mean, it's a very worrying thing. In the early 1960s, the New Zealand government decided to buy a polio vaccine for a mass vaccination campaign against polio here that the Canadian government wouldn't license. It was been manufactured, but the Canadian government wouldn't touch it. It was a barge bomb. They said, get rid of the bloody thing. So the New Zealand government put their hands up and said, we'll buy it. Presumably it was cheap. And the New Zealand's Ministry of Health, it would have been called the Department of Health back then, but anyway, their overall just said, for God's sake, don't buy this thing. The reason the Canadians don't want it is because it's contaminated with SV40, which stands for simian virus 40. It was the 40th monkey virus that they discovered in the process of getting vaccine viruses to grow on the kidneys from monkeys, normally African green monkeys, poor little things. They sacrificed bloody thousands of these poor little monkeys. to use the cells in their kidneys to grow these the polio viruses on for vaccines. And, well, you know, of course, what did the New Zealand government, the Ministry of Health, do? They said, okay, heck, well, it's cheap. We'll just bloody go ahead and do it. And so a large portion of the population got vaccinated with this vaccine, which is contaminated with this virus, which at the time was known to cause tumours. And now we've got a cancer epidemic in New Zealand. And overseas research shows that if you look at the genetic material in some cancers, you can find sequences from this SV40 virus in those cancers.
And yeah, those and I hear people...
brain cancers and childhood leukemias and osteosarcoma.
Well, see, well, the thing is, Kath, I hear people retort that and saying, oh, well, we just detect more cancer now. No! You know, if they found cancer back then, it was because it was a very rare case to get cancer in the first frickin' place.
Mm. Well, that's right. I mean, it's pretty obvious when you've got cancer. I mean, normally you get a lump somewhere, and then if it goes, you know, undetected and untreated, and it progresses, of course, I mean, some cancers naturally regress, and you might never know that you had those ones. And they've also done like interesting research, like autopsies of women in their 40s have quite commonly found asymptomatic tumours in the breast, but they've died from other causes. And they've found these breast tumours that are asymptomatic in women who've died from other causes at much higher rates than women ever get diagnosed in breast cancer at that age. So obviously quite a few of the cancers that do occur in people are asymptomatic and never get diagnosed. Those aren't the ones you need to worry about, of course. The ones you need to worry about are the ones that, you know, once you get a cancer that has established itself and your immune system hasn't gotten it under control, you know, people start getting symptoms, they get pains, they get lumps, they start losing weight, and they end up getting medically investigated. And you know, it's not rocket science in the end to determine that someone's got a cancer if they get all the symptoms of cancer. So, yes, I mean, unfortunately, cancer is more common. It's the leading cause of death for people in my age group for women.
Well, is that possibly because all of you have been given free breast scanning radiation baths?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Is that because women in your age group are being targeted for free breast scanning radiation baths?
No, that's not free until you get to 45, so I don't think you can blame mammograms for it. I think what you can do is you can blame radiation from Chernobyl. I think you can blame hair dyes that are full of carcinogenic rubbish that there's no cancer warning on the packaging. A lot of the hair dyes, not all of them. I think you can blame things like the increasing use of hormonal contraceptives for decades by some people.
Could we think about also, possibly... could we think about historical back tents here? I mean, around the time that you were born, were there any particular big global thingies or even localized types of things that would have caused more cancer? I mean, Chernobyl would be one, sure. But
yeah, that's right. I mean, Chernobyl would. I mean, it's my personal theory. I don't know if it's been, you know, if it's in the literature or anything. But you know, one of the reasons that there's more cancer in women now in their 30s and early 40s is because we're talking about a generation who are children and teenagers, and Chernobyl went off. I would have been, I think, 14, 15 at that age. Now, I haven't got breast cancer, and I don't intend to get breast cancer either, but unfortunately, if you're exposed to radioactive iodine, it doesn't just concentrate in your thyroid. It also concentrates in your breasts. So it's got quite a significant potential to increase breast cancer risks, and I think it's sort of one of those sort of underdiagnosed, you know, cause potential sort of contributing factors.
So does that, and that's because radiation affects dividing cells much more than they do normal stable adult cells that aren't
in
the huge growth stages.
Today
we'd be talking about children, teenagers, and newborns that will be dosed with untold amounts of radioactive iodine from the Fukushima nuclear plant. Mm.
Yeah, no, it's a bad lookout, and you know, I was pleased to hear you advertising iodine. You know, we started taking some iodine, even though you know the amount of radiation getting to New Zealand at this point is going to be a lot lower than what has already met the States, simply because it's going to take longer for it the jet streams in the northern and southern hemisphere to mix.
It's not a bad thing to
take more iodine and gradually get your thyroid saturated, so that and your breast tissue and all the other tissue which has got, you know, a need for iodine. It's not just your thyroid that needs iodine in your body.
And apparently a lot of iodine supplies, potassium iodide and things of that nature, are selling out around the world, and New Zealand is one of the few places that still has plenty to go around, sort of thing.
So I think we
should probably put a banner up on Uncensored as well for your readers too.
Yes, it's a good idea. Sneak preview, we'll probably have something on radiation protection in the next Uncensored to readers. But
ladies and gentlemen, you can subscribe to Uncensored as well. It's a 100-page quarterly, and if you go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and click on the shop and scroll down there, you can see Uncensored magazine. Most recent one is The Truth About Fluoride, and of course with many, many other articles by amazing authors and journalists from around the world as well. Sorry, Kath, I just thought I'd give you a plug.
No, that was great. Thanks for that. And I just wanted to add that the first issue of the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine has got a considerable amount of pages devoted to how to protect yourself from radiation poisoning. That's actually the lead story, because I think it sort of behooves anybody who wants to survive in the world now to take this seriously. You know, it's very unfortunate and incredibly disempowering to think that, you know, somebody's stuff up half a world away is, you know, potentially going to give millions of, you know, innocent people cancer and, you know, cause birth defects and, you know, women who are pregnant and have, you know, radiation exposure and things. But on the other hand, there is research that shows that various natural compounds can significantly reduce the vulnerability of the body to the dangerous effects of radiation. They can help your cells repair their DNA. They can also prevent some of the free radical damage. That's one of the mechanisms by which radiation is dangerous. It sort of goes, you know, you can imagine it's a radioactive particle passing through the body like a sort of a, like a microscopic bullet, if you like, and in the process, you know, whacking off a bit of a cell membrane, which, you know, then creates sort of free radicals. And downstream, you know, get more free radicals and so on and so forth. So if you can take particularly antioxidants, particularly the plant-based ones, like the beta-carotenes, you know, found in spirulina and, you know, leafy green vegetables, and there's other things like turmeric.
And we'll get those all available for you at the video at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, or you can email Catherine at uncensored.co.nz to learn more. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show.